Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look at the screen. William Blake's The Great Red Dragon and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smart.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You want the scent?
Smell yourself. Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Min Hunter, a Man Hunter podcast where we're taking apart Michael Mann's 1986 Manhunter, the adaptation of Thomas Harris's amazing paperback Red Dragon. And we're doing it a scene or scenes at a time, 24 episode series, sometimes really stuffed with multiple guests. And today, this is no less stuffed. It's the great boys from the Film Stage B-Side podcast. It's Dan Mecca and Connor O'Donnell. Gentlemen, welcome to Min Hunter. Thank you so much for being a part of the show and many shows that we do, but thank you for being a part of this one.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Blake. Good to be back, always.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
Our last chat, we had some good movies in there. Some real good ones. On the B-Side podcast, we talked about The Great Waldo Pepper. Yes.
Oh, yeah, which became like an all-time fave immediately for me upon watching it.
Great movie.
A movie that I've been just like, I'm not this person usually, but a movie that I've been like, any half opportunity I can be like, hey, so you know about this movie, The Great Waldo Pepper?
So,
you know what I mean?
Just to
like,
people.
Like at the grocery store or whatnot, just like, hey, you should watch this movie, The Great Waldo Pepper. Like, I'm not really, I never want to force movies on anybody, but that was such a great, that Redford episode. Yeah, so great. Such a great example of like what we do at the B-Side, what you love, Blake, and what you kind of, you know, what you do is so analytical. And that was a great episode of like, to all of it to get to Havana, right?
Oh,
like there was so much.
We were like, Great Waldo Pepper, amazing.
So
yes,
great.
The Hot Rock. Yeah, it's like, yes, cheering in the stands. And then Havana, we're all so tired. This movie is still running. It's still running. It was on. Here we are. We're in the fourth episode of Min Hunter today. We're with Will Graham. Just to orient yourselves into the episode before I ask Dan and Connor a little bit about their relationship. We are back in his hotel. And he's just sort of coming out of his first visit to the Leeds home. That's where we find ourselves. But gentlemen, let's start with all things Manhunter, all things kind of Red Dragon.
Right.
How are your most recent watches? Because I'm obviously aware that you guys are fans of Michael Mann. I'm obviously aware that you guys are a fan of this movie. But like, how was it on rewatch? Because I think Connor, you were talking about there may be nothing cooler than every single Dante Spinotti shot.
Oh, this might be controversial, but I do think this might be like Michael Mann's best looking film.
Yeah, I don't. Like, I don't think that's a. I don't think that's as controversial as you think saying it. I'm just like,
yeah, it seems like a maybe not a hot take, but it's obviously they're very like Heat looks incredible, but I don't think the thing about Heat is like there are parts of this movie that are literally like striking, like you yes. just feel like you've been
well
shot in the face by Dante Spinotti, like in
you
terms
know
of
you
like
know what struck me
at.
to jump off of that what struck me rewatching it was it feels like a guy Michael Mann in this case and I guess Dante Spinotti but Mann specifically who's like proving himself because if you think about the context of his career and we're gonna talk about these 4 minutes but like you know the Keep is right in his immediate rear view and yes. so when you and he had made Thief before the Keep which is still such an insane chronologically thing right but when you think about the Keep being this bigger budget thing that kind of went sideways and all that like it Manhunter feels like a man Michael Mann in this case like being like you know what like I know what I'm doing let me collaborate with these people and fucking prove it like right now right here making this you know what I mean and so yes. I think that stood out to me on this rewatch because Manhunter has never been I've always liked it but it's never been one of my like go-to man rewatches I'm an insider guy yeah. I'm a Miami yeah. Vice guy yeah, from the very same. Beginning But
and people
and
are really,
guy, you know,
people
too,
are but, really mentally stable about Miami Vice recently as well.
Just, oh, dude! Yeah. So famous. The thing about Miami Vice is people are cool about it. That's
people
the
are really, so people are so
they're
chill,
so normal about it.
Ask, just you ask know, our friend Brandon Streisty.
What's funny is Brandon lives. He's in Pittsburgh, so I yeah. keep be, meaning to DM him and be like, "Dude, let's hang, dude."
Oh, you should.
Like,
you guys would love each other. You guys would love each other. But it's like, yeah, totally normal reactions to Miami Vice in the last little bit.
Yeah, totally chill. Yeah, stuff. Look, famously, as we're recording stuff in this country, the United States, right now, as we're recording, famously chill, famously cool.
You guys, that's what I think about the USA. You guys are chill ass. Chill.
We're totally, everything's fine here. We're fine. We're fine here.
I just realized that I'm wearing my Omar Cumming t-shirt as well, just by the way. I completely forgot.
That's
I just
rad.
Completely forgot that I was wearing it. I'm like, oh, shout out. Oh,
you
man.
Know what this reminds me of? So when, not to be too United States centric, but when January 6th happened, I remember I called Connor because we worked together and I yeah. called Connor. I was like, hey, man, so what's going on? Everything like I remember I just called Connor to be like, just like a vibe check. Like, hey, so, people are rushing the Capitol. What's up? We good? What's up? Like, and it feels like a little similar to that as we record. So the energy.
I literally finished my Manhunter rewatch right before the events in question, and
yes,
I
the alleged assassination attempt.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway,
good time. Yeah, people are chill. So yeah, let's get back. You Manhunter hasn't been one of your anchor rewatches.
Not for me in the
rotation.
Me neither. I had seen this in high school, like before I even kind of was into Michael Mann as a sure. filmmaker overall. I think I may have even seen this before I had seen Heat, honestly. Mm. And so, but it didn't register. All I saw it through the lens of was like, oh, this is like the prelude to Silence of the Lambs, right?
Well, and also people, Hannibal I think, I'm sure you get into this, but like people might not know now because Mann is now such a, especially in the world of cinephiles and what
have
you.
He's an institution now, yeah.
Yeah.
He's an institution. I remember, Connor, you're kind of saying this.
Yeah.
Learning about Manhunter as an budding, you know, whatever, cinephile, whatever you want to call it, film fan, it was like a sneaky, it was like a, hey, FYI, right, it was like, hey, by the way, there was a Hannibal Lecter movie before Silence of the Lambs.
But it had,
you know, and it was,
from my vantage point, it had nothing to do with Mann. It was pitched to me as like,
right.
like oh
this
yeah,
guy Brian
this actor
Cox
Brian Cox.
Played. Yeah, it was like, you know, yeah.
But so
and it's so funny. He plays and that's it exactly, so much I would differently.
I would just say this, though. That's exactly my experience. I had never knew anything about Michael Mann. One of my friend's mums was a famous video store, like weekly rental getter. So she would just have a pile of them. She was a stay-at-home mom. And so, like, you would catch her, you know, she running, you know, my buddy around to school and school activities and all those things. And then I'd be hanging out at their place quite a bit. And she'd sometimes just, you know, plonk on a movie, just throw something on the background. And I remember I walked in on her watching this in the lounge room and I go, what's this? And she's like, oh, it's the story before Silence of the Lambs. That was exactly my experience. I looked at it like, Manhunter, what is it, Manhunter? I thought it was something else. At the time, no concept of Red Dragon, nothing. And I think I just want to make sure that I call this out here. So in 1985, a little film by at that stage, quite inflammatory Hollywood near-death causing filmmaker named Michael Cimino came out called The Year of the Dragon.
Yeah, and
the Year of the Dragon stank, and just the Cimino stank made them change the name of the movie from Red Dragon at that time because they did not want any association.
Interesting.
So that was actually the thing. So some people have gone, oh, was it called Manhunter? But like, there's
Manhunter's a good title. It's a good title.
It's a great title. You know, it's a great title.
Red Dragon's a great title, obviously.
Yeah, they're both like, they're both good titles.
They're both good.
You know,
but
you could do worse.
Was it really? It was because of Cimino, because it was Dino De Laurentiis. Yeah.
Dino De Laurentiis. It was because of the Cimino stink. So because of everything... There's a whole, there's 20 other podcasts.
Can we say Year of the Dragon? Kind of a cool ass movie.
Can I say recently a part of the Imprint Films collection and reviewed by myself and Lexi. And I was like, wasn't bad. I really liked it. Actually,
pretty cool.
I'll have to pick that up. Actually.
Check that out. Yeah. It should be on special now. Cool. It's one of the old batches, but yeah, no, I remember being like, you know what? Like, this is good. I'm pretty happy with this.
Yeah. I mean, just a move. Yeah. Anyway, we don't need to get into Year of the Dragon, but that's an interesting factoid of the Red Dragon to Manhunter pivot. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now, watching it now, we've had the scene set, both of you not in the rotation. It's there. You, all of us have had that same experience. Watching it now, what was it like just before in the preparation for what we're about to do? What was that like? What was that latest viewing like for you guys?
Connor, go ahead.
Yeah, I love prepping for these things with you, Blake, because I feel like part of what's so valuable about what you do when you do these deep dives is really, really focusing on a thing can cause you to like just unlock, I don't know, a thesis or just any kind of thing to then wrap the movie around. So I like
appreciation.
So in rewatching it, I watched the section we're going to talk about three times through.
Yeah.
And then I finished the rest of the movie, kind of just thinking about this sequence the entire time too. But on a general rewatch, this movie is, to kind of going back to what Dan said, it feels like man starting to really like lay down almost his like ground rules.
Yes. Right?
Cause like, and Thief has it too. Like obviously like you watch Thief and it's one of those movies where you're like, oh no, like this is immediately what this guy is gonna, some version of what this guy is going to do for the rest of his career. Right. But this is like almost like codifying it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yes. And like, especially to Dan's point, especially after The Keep, which in its own ways still feels like a Michael Mann movie, but is obviously a departure specifically aesthetically. But like when you watch this movie after you've seen basically every other Michael Mann movie, it's like, you're like, oh yeah, no, this dude. And
well,
part of it's the Dante Spinotti relationship, right? Like certain shots and Heat that just, you're like, oh, this is where came from. Right?
Peterson
and,
looks like Vincent from Collateral. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
My thing with Peterson was I said this to our mutual friend, Mitchell Beaupre. I was like, William Peterson is like cool Richard Dreyfuss. And like,
so cool, Richard Dreyfuss.
And but you know
and
what I mean?
Hot
and,
Richard Dreyfuss as well.
Yeah, and, but it's one thing that I also kind of got wrapped up in is I was like, it's almost like if you took Richard Dreyfuss and Don Johnson and like mashed them together, you get William Peterson. And so the Don Johnson Miami Vice of it all was I was like, oh yeah, you are a Michael Mann guy. Like this is exactly to the kind of cool fucking hot dude he like loves to own in.
To me, specifically this sequence we're talking about, these 4 minutes, it's like sicko mode. Like Manhunter to me is so, and it really struck me this time. It's like sicko mode, the movie of like, you know, because Thief is this kind of.
It's really grounded.
You know, beautiful. It's grounded. It's beautiful. It's tragic. It's Chicago, right? It feels very much in the wheelhouse of the Michael Mann we know now that we know him, right? In the way of just this is a researcher. This is a documentarian. This is a student, right? The way that you know Michael Mann, how he came up, right? And the France of it all, the kind of the learned nature of his obsessions, right? Thief feels obvious now, right? I mean, this is all retroactive. And then, like, The Keep is a swing and it's a miss in some respects and all that, you know. And
such a tragedy that The Keep specifically for him being a massive swing that he didn't get to realize the vision of what he was trying to do with the aesthetic. Like, that feels more tragic to me because I'm always, I don't know about you, and I feel like I can say this. When a filmmaker swings and misses, I'm like, did you see that swing though? Did you see that swing?
That's our whole podcast. I love the keep
as kind of this like malformed thing.
Yes.
You know, that you're like, oh man, but
Meg Shields said the greatest thing ever. The Keep is like the videotape from The Ring. It should only be watched, discovered in a forest on an old VHS tape, and you find it and you go home and you put it on and then it should be watched by
Will Graham
Martin Henderson running around like, just
that she's like, it should only be watched on VHS. I never want to see it upscaled. I want to see it found. I want to see it crummy. That's the way, and I'm like, yeah, that's.
And can I connect us? What's beautiful about that reference is Brian Cox, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
We got B Cox in The Ring. We got him here. It's amazing.
All right, well, let's dive into this. As I've been saying, for some folk, you know, the great Roger Ebert's Cinema Interruptus really was a touchstone for One Heat Minute to begin with, right? Because he used that format, which was showing a film. At a film festival or at a festival, showing a film and allowing the audience to say stop at any single moment and to scrutinize it. And he only did it with films that he believes stood up to the scrutiny of that. And so that's exactly how we're going with Manhunter and Minhunter today is we're going to play the scene that we're talking about now, which is, as I said earlier, Graham in his hotel returning from the Leeds home and processing all the information that he saw there. We're going to watch it and the boys and I are just going to watch it and we're going to interrupt and talk through the different scene elements of the scene that we find fascinating, find interesting. You guys are going to listen along and I hope you enjoy. Here we go.
By the way, this hotel, can we talk about it?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah. That hotel was amazing. That shot is amazing. Smoking indoors is
so
amazing.
I don't know if this is exactly the same. So he, and we'll see in a second, I suppose, but that he's staying in a Marriott in Atlanta. Yes.
It looks exactly like I've stayed at that Marriott.
I have stayed at that hotel. So
I think we both, because we've worked, been, me and you have worked at a lot
plenty
of
times in Atlanta. I've been to this hotel.
I have stayed in this hotel.
This atrium thing is extremely striking. So it's one of those things.
Can I tell you something? It's like scare, like not in a bad way. It is like striking and scary. Yeah.
But it looks to me like a spine
with a rib cage.
With a rib cage surrounding it. It's that and like the elevator almost looks like a neutron firing or something like up your spinal cord. Like
you've even got these drapey things that almost could be like organs or intestines.
Like if you guys are watching the cut, it's like we've paused on the frame at 13 minutes 47 seconds. It's like that's the thing that struck me when I was watching this again for you boys. I was just like, there are things that are now just popping to me. I'm just like, God, this looks like inside of a carcass. Like,
and well, this is kind of what I was speaking to before with just the images out of nowhere, seemingly, that like slap you in the face, right? Yeah. That like you can almost feel Man and Spinotti on like a location scout walking into like the lobby and looking up and not even maybe saying anything to each other and just being like, well, you know, just like looking at each other like, well, we gotta, right? We gotta fucking shoot that fucking
Manta. Dante just sets up the shot, goes, Dante, right here, right? Yeah. This is exactly one. Seriously. Little lens flare. It's awesome.
I would want to know how dressed this is, you know, like specifically these sort of pink ribbon things that we're talking about. Like that feels maybe like something. Maybe that was in Man's like brain.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's
an incredible hotel. It's wild.
Yeah. It's a wild.
It's so cool that you guys have been there. That's awesome. Just by sheer coincidence. Cause I'm always like, I know that you know, we're definitely in this show going to go through the different shooting locations. And I knew that it was shot in the Atlanta Marriott, but I was like, just like they use like a Museum of Modern Art for the Hannibal Lecter cells, which we'll obviously get there when we come up to the 7th episode of the series. But yeah, it's like here, it's like, oh.
Well, the obvious comp, you know, to me, the obvious comp would be the Guggenheim in New York, right?
Yes. Sure. Museum, yeah, it's got a rotunda thing.
It has the rotunda thing. And it's like, it's just striking, right? I mean, I think just from a vertical visual aesthetic, you're just, you know, in the States at least, there aren't a lot of structures that capture this. And so I think you're getting, I mean, you're just getting so much out of an establishing shot, which is, you know, Man is great at. And I think, and is great at it because it's not, he's limited. Like he picks his battles and this is a beautiful kind of establishing shot. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's keep going. It's that blowing in the breeze. Oh my goodness. So it's great. Amazing.
Yeah. Oof, here we go.
So this frame, again, this is part of that like Man starting to codify thing, right? And I have not read the Thomas Harris novel,
right?
But I have seen Red Dragon. So I question, because I think both of you have read it, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, many times. I love Red Dragon. Connor, Red Dragon.
I've only read Silence. Yeah.
But for both of you then, Red Dragon for me is his best novel.
Okay. It
is so fantastic. That's like Silence of the Lambs is amazing. It's so fantastic and so readable. And it's just one of those things that if you actually pick it up, it's unputdownable. Like it's just
sure.
You are smoking through that book.
So it just a general question, or well, I guess a specific question. So in this sequence, in the book, right, is Will Graham, is he going through like paper evidence and paper photos? Like he,
no,
like
he's Ed watching, Martin, he's watching tapes.
Okay. So this is from the book then. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Cause it's, you know, obviously Michael Mann very famously has like a specific relationship to video, right? And so it to me is this interesting striking moment of like a frame within a frame, and like you're almost seeing like you're like seeing the future aesthetic of Michael Mann through the TV in the home movie kind of thing.
That's funny.
And so I think it's almost this beautiful, and not, you know, it's not that that's the specific intention with this framing, but I do love that like Spinotti chooses to frame it not so close on the TV, that there's like still a sense that like you get the balcony outside, there's like a lot still going on of like a world within a world, where he's like you're not fully honed in on the video itself. He's like peering through this like portal.
Oh yeah. I did a conversation with the great author Jean-Baptiste Thoret, who's been a Michael Mann scholar for some time and recently wrote a book that's now been adapted into English, which you can get, which is amazing. So, but we talk about in that conversation his relationship with television, and he's like, he goes, for me, Blake, there couldn't be a more, like we sort of like uncovered something together there couldn't be a more overt way that Michael Mann in Heat is saying that he doesn't want to be a television maker anymore than remaking a television pilot that has failed into a gigantic, huge, you know, $60 million action epic. And right. then having one of the lead characters literally take a television
right, destroy
and
it.
Kick yeah. it out of a car and destroy it. It's like this guy is having a dialogue with form, like explicitly in what we're watching. So
that's a great point.
It's so good. I mean, that was just a discovery for me. But here again, the dialogue between Dolehide as representing video. And Will Graham representing 35 millimeter is like such a fascinating thing, because, you know, that's the whole dialogue of this here, this kind of like, you know, different textures of like the way that you see the world. And yeah, it's so brilliant. Such a great. And yeah, the other thing that I spoke about a lot in the previous episode, which I'll just clue you guys on, is like the idea of after all the awfulness of the scene that precedes this scene, true. That you would want to go home and comfort yourself by watching more home movies of these people being alive.
Right.
It's also one of the most awful things I could possibly think of doing after seeing what has been left of them there, you know, like being reminded of their lives. All right, let's keep going.
And even just this reverse shot, right? Like the choice, you know, Will Graham's basically at the center, but he's like almost just right up against the edge of the TV, which is essentially taking up half of the frame, right? Like it's such a great choice because it's so.
Well, yeah. What struck me watching this frame specifically is the idea. It's a very show, don't tell, and you know Mann's sure. really good at this, using the TV set to frame it as literal darkness, where like
right. yes,
this right. is the moment of Graham trying to crack into the mind of Dolehide, and you're literally you know bifurcating the screen yeah. right, to show Graham watching a TV set and it's darkness, right? And then right. you're going to see in a second the dolly move to kind of open up the frame where yes. he begins to realize, and you can play it, but he begins to figure it out, right? Yeah. And it's a brilliant, you know, move by Spinotti and obviously, man.
When they were dead, he smashed the mirrors and began selecting pieces that he would use later on Mrs. Leeds. Killing Mr. Leeds and the children would take less than a minute. Mrs. Leeds' injuries were postmortem 4 or 5 minutes later. What do you do in the interval? Smeared bloodstains on the west wall.
Can I just say that this home movie is so gorgeously composed?
Yeah.
The kid running up to the lens is like so affecting. You know, like that's yeah. the thing about Mann. This is a sick man, dude. Like yeah. Michael Mann is a sick fucking dude. Like just to be like, oh yeah, like let the kid run up to the yeah. lens. Like that fucking kid got
and let him and like, let him point to his dad and mom and say, I'm filming. It's yeah, such a, it's I'm like, filming.
Well, and also just
sick of the movie.
It's like so Lumiere, like it's so like 1896, like just like, yeah, dude, we're making a movie. You're like, it's this dude, it's like wild. When you really dig into his movies, this is the thing about the like when you really get into his stuff, it's like it's so elemental. He's wild. Like yeah. you're just like, what a sick brilliant person that is making these movies, you know.
And again, the other kind of beautiful thing about we're back on sort of this framing of the TV, the frame within the frame, right? And what I love about it specifically, and not to jump too far ahead or whatever, but obviously these tapes, these films come back in a very significant way. And so what I love is that it's all right there. And it's a force for the trees kind of thing, right? Where Will Graham doesn't even know what he's looking at, right? Like, as he's looking at it. And so it's, but it's this beautiful, like, it's a beautiful piece of sort of like misdirection, only because he's almost in this like state of analysis, he's overthinking it, right? And he will get to it, but he comes to what is a great realization, right? Yes. Where you're like, oh, okay, this is the thing. This is gonna, the thing that's gonna blow it all wide open, when in fact crucial in, you know, whatever, in 2 hours or whatever.
All right, here we go. Let's keep going. I love that they're also silent.
So he has to like take a, he like has to reset.
Yeah, has to take a beat.
Yeah.
And then again, the television still provides like implicitly framing here as he's getting up to call Molly.
Right. And it's, I mean, it's another person in the room, right? It's like,
yeah.
So this scene, one of the things that I love is it's almost aesthetically the reverse of the phone call in the Miami Vice pilot.
Yes, it is.
During the great needle, the in the air tonight needle drop, but that, like, you almost feel like you're gonna get that, right? You're gonna get him calling her, she's not gonna answer, he's gonna leave some sort of a somber, you know, voicemail or whatever on the answering machine, and she answers, and you can keep playing.
Hello?
Molly?
Is that you?
Yes, me, honey.
And also here, just quickly on the contrast, it's 15 minutes, 30 seconds as we're watching, is like the sanctuary blue of the beginning of their scenes.
Oh, dude. It's still
the sanctuary. And you think that this warm light is actually more comforting, you know, the warm light of a hotel room, you know, lots of soft pinks, browns, you know, whatever the case may be. You've got all these sort of like cool reddish colors. And it's like, in this space, when I see that contrast, I'm like, hotels like this old school hotel that, you know, we've all probably stayed in our lives, is like, it feels so alien, cold and awful compared to that sanctuary. And so coming back to Molly just for a split second, and even us being sort of visually transported back there, it gives you such comfort that he's not going to have at really many more stages of this film at all.
No, and it's almost not too dissimilar from the color palette that's in the victim's home.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right? Like,
dude, but sorry, keep going. Yeah.
No. So that's just to say that, it's this interesting reversal where you're just kind
that's
of
what
like,
it is yeah that's yeah. exact dude the fucking ethereal blue dude
yeah
as like peace and the comfort. This is what I'm talking about with Sicko Mode. It's like I honestly the biggest reveal on this rewatch was like the brilliance of like, let's use the comfortable colors when he's like digging into the killer's mind.
Yes.
To insinuate that is when Will Graham is most comfortable.
Yes.
And when he's with his family, this like beautiful blue is alien to him and he's doing his best to acclimate. It's so fucked up. Like,
right. Or it's like the shade that you would use for the murder scenes. Yeah. Traditionally,
you know what I mean?
It's right. Like it's a nighttime so blue. Yeah.
But like, not to get too film school about this stuff, but like, this is the shit that people don't like. This is fucks with your head. You know what I mean? Right. Like,
it's
this
the
is
stuff
people,
that hangs around. It stays with you. It stays.
Like,
in
this
your
is what brilliant artists do to like fuck with you. When like 3 years from now, you're like, yeah, but that was so weird. Kim Grice was like that was the blue, and but she was good.
And she's so tranquil, and she's in white sheets. She's get wearing it white, and her hair
like
is
he was
gorgeous.
Having fun in that hotel, and it's like it's so crazy that he just did this shit.
And we don't need to
in 86, you know. And it's like, and people are just like, "Yeah, it's all right." And you're like, "No, dude."
Well, we don't need to literally rewind, but like before he gets up to go make the phone call, right? His reaction is like, okay.
He's
so
literally
like, so, and it's kind of, it's like colored in a few different ways, right? Because you could maybe
like not a lot of people can do this. Like, let me just say that, look, there's the dolly shot. Like, yeah, and it opens the TV, it up to this, like, he's starting to figure it out. Dude, it's fucking brilliant. It's
and,
crazy.
And the thing is Peterson plays it so beautifully because that sigh could be a sigh of, like, of exhaustion. It could be a sigh of frustration.
I gotta call my wife.
Right. But it could be colored so many different ways where it could be, like, he is realizing what we were just speaking to a moment ago of like, oh my God, I'm like watching this tape of these people that were murdered. And like,
but you know, so what's maybe even more sicko mode, Connor? It's like, I'm watching this. I'm in this space.
Yeah.
I'm getting back to the mindset.
And my
epiphany is not coming. So where do I need to go? I need to go back
my wife,
to this. I need to call my wife. I need to get, I need to reacclimate. I need to go to the place that I feel the worst and most alien, and then like,
that's the thing. It's not, and that's what I mean. It's like it's the reverse of the Miami Vice pilot moment because it's not some tender, like deeply emotional thing. It's like all procedural. It's all like, this is not him.
But also Peterson, I mean, I rewatched so Red Dragon as well. Obviously in prep for this.
Same, yeah.
And I got no problem with Red Dragon. We don't need to get too deep into it. I got no problem with Red Dragon.
I have all the problems. Red Dragon, for me, I have to say it, so I'm going to repeat it as many times as I can. The movie Solo, I'm going to give you this analogy. The movie Solo had Han Solo, Lando Calrissian, Chewbacca, and the Millennium Falcon. Four of my favorite things of all time. It should have been starting at a baseline of 4 stars.
Right.
Red Dragon, stars, Harvey Keitel, Ed Norton, Anthony Hopkins, returning as Hannibal Lecter, written by
Ted Talley,
shot by Dante Spinotti,
Philip Seymour Hoffman, and it still stinks. It sucks. It absolutely sucks.
It's sucko mode.
If this is sicko mode, that's sucko mode.
Well, so this is, but it's a great, so this is, so the film school thing of this is like that. It, the brilliant thing is Michael Mann versus Brett Ratner, right? Yeah. Like that's what I was saying right before we pressed record, right?
It's like Mike Tyson versus a toddler.
Well, this is my thing, right? When the Ted Talley credit came up, it like blew my mind because I was like, Ted Talley. And I looked it up to double check. And I was like, this dude wrote Silence, right? Yeah. Like Ted Talley is a legit screenwriter, God bless. And then I knew that Spinotti had shot both, and that's its own thing.
And Ted Talley used the original director's cut script of Manhunter as the template.
Right. And so you have all the, like you're saying, you just said it, like it's, the difference is Ratner v. Mann. I mean, that is the Dino De Laurentiis was involved, right? I mean, like you have all of these elements that are like totally common.
You think Spinotti like purposely took the job to like dumb it down?
Dante was like, I'm part of the guild. He asked me to do it. And like, I'm just, you know, that's Dante's very like, apart from being a genius, he's very modest as far as his contribution, because he's like, no, he's like, you know, in the times I've been lucky enough to speak to him, this is such a treat that I can say this, but Dante's like, no, Blake, Michael composes the shots. You know, I light the shots and I make them happen and I help him pick the lenses to make his effect work. But Michael is a great composer of the scene that we're going to shoot. You know, he goes, I don't walk in there and tell Michael what is best, or he doesn't ask me what is best. And so then you can really see that like, Michael Mann and Dante's relationship to make these shots happen is is well, everything.
Look, I don't want to get too inside baseball, and I don't know, this is third person like accounts, but I've had conversations with people who've worked on Brett Ratner sets, and without getting too deep into it, let me just say it's a different vibe. Let's just say that the man is very much a product of a producerial environment, and he's very much like, you know, just somebody who's maybe not as control of every frame as other directors, like for example Michael Mann. And I think the core difference, right, is that. And I think it's such an interesting, you'll rarely get a case study as brilliant and as interesting as Red Dragon versus Manhunter in terms of just like same screenwriters, same cinematographers, you know, great actors, you know, like what you were saying. It just, it is striking to watch, you know. And if I'm more forgiving, that's just because of my nature, right? I think, you know, these are.
I'm gonna name four directors, okay? Michael Mann.
Yep.
Jonathan Demme.
Love it.
Ridley Scott.
Sure.
And Brett Ratner. One of these things is not like
Hannibal Rising. Peter, what's his name, directed Hannibal Rising. But anyway,
I'm just saying, one of these things is not like the other. Like, I think this weird serial killer franchise has some of the best filmmaking you could ever hope to see from like wildly different.
Peter Weber, styles. Where are you? Peter Weber, where
are
you at?
Where are you at, Peter Weber?
Peter!
So good. All right, let's keep going. Let's keep going.
But yeah, so he does this almost out of like an exasperation, like, oh, I gotta do this thing. Okay.
This is where the drone as well, Connor, comes in to reinforce your point. The drone is coming in.
Yeah.
That score.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Is that you? Yes. Kicks in, yeah.
Look, I'll call you tomorrow.
Like, hang on. What a piece of shit. He literally, like, calls her in the middle of the night, wakes her up, like, knows he's waking her up.
It's obligatory.
And it's just like, so good. I'll call you tomorrow. It's like, what? You asshole. Let her sleep.
She's in peace, though. She's a peaceful entity. And it's like, I understand the impulse, right? The impulse of, just want to call her. I have to call her. And then when he realizes what he's doing.
I did do a check with my wife while we were watching this scene. I was like, if I did that, would you be pissed? Like, because I would expect you to be pissed if I just called you in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Woke you up and then was like, oh, you know what? I'll call you.
I gotta go. I gotta go.
I love you. I love you. I'm so sorry. I got the time wrong. Sorry. I love you. I'll talk to you later. Okay.
I love you. I love you too, baby.
This poor woman.
I actually think that's really sweet that he's like, no, don't worry. I'm sorry. I messed up. I'll call you. I love you. And she's like, I love you too, baby. It's just nice.
She's great, by the way.
She
is great. Yeah. She is great.
Here it is. Just as she's... Oh, that's the sicko mode shot. Okay, we're at 15 minutes, 51 seconds. I'm just going to take it back like just a hair.
Sure.
So we're at 15 minutes, 34 now. I'm going to talk over it as it's happening. I love you. I love you too, baby. We watch Graham. He cradles the phone with his left hand. And then he's sort of despondent. He's hunched over. And then he sort of straightens and he perks up. Just as she gets in comfort, this is now 15 minutes, 53, 54. She's in peace. She's in comfort. And it's like that horrific camera movement.
Zoom in.
It's an innocent body.
But it's so important to say, it's so important to say, it's a zoom.
Yes.
Like, I just want to be very clear about this. If we're going to get this granule. The zoom.
Yes.
Is so much more fucked up, sicko mode.
You're expecting something terrible to
happen. Yes, exactly.
Right? The music is like really kind of.
This is the thing about this fucking movie and this guy, this fucking sick. Fuck Michael Mann, like, he's just like, what a genius, crazy guy this is, where you're like you're just like, you're like, bro, like,
well, this, no, do you know, you know what this is a lot like?
Let me go for a minute.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
This is what's crazy about this shit, dude. This is, let's just contextualize this. This is minute 16 of this movie. Like, I'm watching this, I'm on vacation, I'm like rewatching this movie with my family, God bless. And I'm like, this shit's wild. Like, I'm like, I've seen this movie like more than one time. I'm like rewatching this, like, is she gonna get killed right now? Like, you're
exactly.
Not, you
and
know.
The last time we saw the Zoom was literally right. Dollarhide zooming the opening, in on the Leeds family.
Yeah. This is sick shit. Michael Mann should be arrested for something.
And,
I don't know what.
And because it also feels like the thing that is in. I mean, you mentioned the alien nature of all this to Will Graham, right? Like, this feels like the feeling that's in his head all the time when he
can I say right? Is the worst part of Red Dragon, which I kind of tacitly defended before, the worst part of it, rewatching it today, was it's all Tell, where like Keitel is well, Will Graham, as you know, Will Graham, Edward Norton, you know, you get into people's heads, as you know, Will Graham, we're talking, we're having a conversation about it. And it's like, so like, you're like, okay, well, this whole movie is
man
in his head, you know.
Yeah, like, and not I don't want to get ahead of it, but just to put a button on that thought, right? The only time this movie chooses to actually tell you, it comes from the mouth of Hannibal Lecter, and has a way more astute power when that happens, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, 100%.
When he's the dude telling you something, you're like, oh God, right? 100%. And so. But that's all to say that this aesthetic going on right here, right? Like, you almost
16
get
minutes
feeling...
and 2 seconds, right? If you want to look at the frame and look at beautiful Kim Grace comfortable in a white
shirt. The thing about the Zoom, right, is like it's inherently by its design, right? You are fucking up the frame, right? Mm. You're pushing into the frame, right? So it's like, it's so garish, but not like, it's so stylish, right?
Yes. Like, well, it's because he's using, you know, at this point, 10 years worth of filmic slasher film language, right?
Yes.
To dictate what he wants you to be thinking, right? And like, the best part about it is that it's this beautiful thing painted in like this insane sense of foreboding, and it reminds me a lot of the scene where Al Pacino kind of finally parts ways with Diane Venora in Heat, and like he basically is like, I'm gonna go get Neil McCauley, right? And it should be this like very sad moment, and the way he just like skips down the stairs, he's like,
my favorite shot of Heat,
it's the best.
And,
but
she then collapses because she knows that he's never coming back.
Him running down the stairs like a kid at Christmas morning.
Yeah,
it's probably my favorite shot.
That's
of
sicko
his
mode,
career.
Michael Mann. That's what this is.
This is a disturbed person. Like,
I just love that Dan is coming back. This man should be under arrest.
He should be in,
but
it's sanitarium.
It's the same energy because he makes, and I had mentioned this to you, Dan, last night. Like, he makes movies about men in orbit, right? Mm. Which means like they are on a path. Sometimes that path is circular, but either way, it's predetermined.
Right.
And there is a thing that they're orbiting around that they will never touch because that's not how orbits work. Right.
Yes.
And he's just, the men of Michael Mann just move in their orbit. And the only thing that affects them are the meteorites or asteroids or whatever that happen to like come into their path and, fuck shit up. Right. And like, that's what this scene is. It's like, he's Will Graham is both like, he's visualizing, you know, this moment with his wife in theory, while also looking at these home movies,
right,
and it's like
it, yeah,
yeah, while using all of that to crack the thing, right?
Yeah.
To move further along on his orbit, but it's all just stuff that is maybe seemingly just getting
and it's
right?
What, like, you're saying, crazy. We can keep playing it. What you're saying is a good as we move forward with the scene. Like, the important part of these few minutes is this is the first moment where Graham is moving forward. Cracking Dollarhide,
yeah,
in some capacity, right? Which obviously will continue on with the film. And like, that's what I mean. It's like, you've seen plenty of disturbing things even by minute 15 in this film, but this is when, and this is, look, the thing about Peterson that I think is underrated is, like, between this and To Live and Die in LA, he really kind of captured this kind of like maximalist 80s thing that, if you can kind of credit to 80s filmmaking, like, he was the perfect actor for that moment of, like, those eyes, right? Yeah. Those eyes, that face, like, he was 11 out of 10, oh, right? And I think, if you want to talk about, like, cocaine cinema, not to get too, like,
yeah,
not to get too reductive about it, but I mean, if we want to really kind of, like, talk about the Oliver Stone times and the, you know, like, the 80s,
yeah,
you're really, Peterson was the perfect man for that moment, right? And it was a quick moment, right? He kind of, he became a TV actor,
and he could have, and CSI, but, in many ways, this is the role that, and even like Quentin Tarantino himself said, like, when people saw Manhunter, they wanted William Peterson to only be this guy. They're like, we could watch 10, we wish that there were 10 more Thomas Harris, Will Graham stories that could just keep going into perpetuity, which is obviously what led to something like the Hannibal series, which is like bringing the Will Graham character to the front and center. And he took a while to, like, every movie he did that wasn't Will Graham, people were like, bro.
Well, can I tell you, I think that's why CSI was a hit.
Yes.
Like, straight up. Sure. Like, right. not to get too granular with it, but like, he's doing his own little sicko mode thing in that show.
Right. Like, yeah, it's basically,
you know, they capture something on a TV level. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. But
let's keep going. Let's end in this sick zoom. Now this is where it gets really gnarly. Reset.
And he cracks it and the TV goes away and he knows, right? It's fucking brilliant. It's fucking wild, man, dude.
It's worth noting too, this is the first time he crosses the threshold of the TV.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. This is, dude.
Like, he actually leans behind the TV for the first time in terms
fundamental
of
shit, dude.
Light dark split. Yeah.
That's something you can't afford for me to know about, isn't it? God, she's lovely, isn't she?
Fucking sick motherfucker, dude. It's wild. It's like crazy. It's like, I can't get over his performance. He's so insane. It's like, look at those eyes. Like, I would never want to meet this guy. I would just be like, dude, what's up? You good? Well,
that Peterson's whole energy, though, is like, it's this, because it's the same thing in To Live and Die in LA. His whole energy is like compromised man. Yes. Right, like this human has been compromised. Like, there just is, there maybe there was something there, it's not there now. Like, there,
and I love the idea of, like, he's good at his job only because he's going there, right? Which I think is an interesting thing to talk about, of like, he is smart, okay, sure, right? But plenty of people are smart, right? But what this guy's willing to do is like go there.
Yes.
Right. And I do think it's so American, not, you know, like, it's so American. It's so edgy. And it's so, you know, like, I just love that element of this performance. And it's so lacking in the Edward Norton performance. You're right. I mean, it's just so funny. It's like, you're just like, this guy was just like, let's get wild with the performance, you know. And you got to credit that to Mann, right? I mean, as much as to Peterson.
Yeah, because he's pushing him to a level here and to embrace the sicko. He's like, let's just go. Let's get to this. Let's get to this scene because I just love watching it be unpacked here by him.
Wait, sorry. Can we do one? I want to mention one thing that I noticed because I watched this a lot of times. Do you guys notice the jump cut?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dude, first of all, let's just for a minute, like, awesome, man. Yeah. He's just there was a take that was better. I'm going to jump cut it, whatever.
Yes. There's a lot of.
Do you know
that.
The confidence that takes? Like, this is what I'm talking about with these fucking.
And he's 100% right. It happens a couple times where you can see
because
where.
Who cares?
And he jumps into. What is the best gesture that we've just skipped past? It's like 17 minutes and 1 second to 2 seconds where he's moving his hand up and down next to his body in like a rowing motion. And he's going, there's no talcum powder in the room. And it's just that is when he's like, oh no,
that's
impulsively just moving and he doesn't even know what he's doing. That's the take I need.
And look, that's man at the Steenbeck with his editor seeing that shit and being like, dude, we'll jump cut it, whatever. And I'm like, that type of renegade decision making is what's missing in Hollywood, dude. When I saw that rewatching this, I was like, this is a genius that he was like, whatever, dude, we'll jump cut it. Who cares? And I'm like, yes, dude, there should be more of that now.
Yeah.
Make it dirty. Make it get the best take. Anyway, keep playing it. It's fucking great.
Rubber glove as you pulled it off to touch her. You took off your gloves to touch her, didn't you?
No.
Didn't you, you son of a bitch? You touched her with your bare hands, and then you put your gloves back on. But while your gloves were off, did you open all her eyes so that they could see you?
Love this insert of him furiously dialing. Jeez. And he stands up and he's like, see ya. Oh. And you can see there's another minor cut there. They actually, but it's not a jump cut like before. It's a cut for speed. They want him to get to the frenzy faster. And it's just like a split second like cut.
And can we talk about when he calls Kim Grace? It's like laconic, it's obligatory.
Yeah.
And when he calls Farina, it's distinctive, it's energetic. That's editing, man. That's you don't know.
Well, and we're actually inserting on it, right? Like looking at the fingers.
The energy of the close up, the energy of the insert. Like you don't know you're feeling that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
the energy of this
coverage.
Bic lighter. The energy of the Bic lighter.
And
in
is
the
this
as well?
Other exactly, in right? terms this of this
fucking,
half of
the fucking unleaded cigarettes, dude. Under the Bic lighter.
In terms of this half of the frame, this reverse angle, right? Because we're introduced, like we said before, to the TV screen, right? And then this is the reverse half of the room. Is this the first actual close up of anything, right? Like, because everything else has just kind of, and that.
Mediums
motherfuckers
wise,
is the fucking power of the close-up. You know what I mean? Like it's like
so good.
It's great.
Look at him. Look at that hand move to the wall.
Yeah. He's loving it. That's the thing. He's loving it. This is a man in his element.
It's
right
great
now.
Too, because this is what I love is this is, you know. And I think the three of us have talked about this before. Dan and I talk about it a lot. People good at their jobs, right? Like when someone's good at their jobs in a fucking movie, it's great, right? Also, when there's a good figuring it out scene in a movie, it's great.
This movie
these are both of those things at the exact same time in this in this whole scene, right? Which is why it rules. But like, it sets up a couple of these mannerisms and trademarks where you can tell when. Will Graham is in the zone because like he'll do this later when they're figuring a thing out about certain things and like he'll have his hand against the window or something like that. And and that's like when he's like legit like keyed in and turned on and he's like ready to go. And also there's this weird, I'd be curious to know what you guys think about this. But there's this, so this is the first time, because it comes up a couple of times, this is the first time he basically calls Dolarhyde a son of a bitch, right? It like, yeah. He's like, you did this, you son of a bitch, didn't you? Right? It's like a pattern of his, right? It comes back later when he's looking at the crime scene again, or one of the other crime scenes again from like a tree, right? He says it again.
Right, later.
And it's almost this like, he's so in the zone, it feels almost like it's like dirty talk or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like a kink kind of like,
totally.
But it's this beautiful, like reflexive thing in the way that a kink like that might be, where
and,
it's like,
and to speak in the parlance of our time, Connor, it's game recognizing game.
Well, that's exactly
that's
the thing.
What's this, sicko about yeah, this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. It also begs the question, 86, how much of that had been around before this? Like, I'm not saying this is the first, obviously, one of this, but like, you know,
it's so hot on the heels of profiling becoming a thing.
That's like, what I'm saying.
That's what Mindhunter, the great Fincher series, is all about, is the emergence of that. Obviously, it's wildly dramatized in some respects, but then wildly
specific. But the book Mindhunter had probably come out, I think, around this time.
Absolutely.
Because Mindhunter, it's
80s. It's an 80s book, and then it changed.
I don't know if you guys have read Mindhunter. It's an incredible book, and it's very much in this vein of like, it's written in that way of, it's a great point, Blake, because it's like, I don't want to get ahead of my skis here in terms of like, this is the first time, but it feels, and this is what's
Red Dragon comes out in the wake of that book, and Thomas Harris, you would imagine, is aware of that, and
sure,
Criminal Profilers, and it had started to become an attention thing because there were serial killers that were being found. Obviously, serial killers in the series Mindhunters, which is excellent, it sort of like explicates it so beautifully, which is like, when you have a population, a huge population of people, these kind of aberrations in like typical human behavior are more frequent to come up. And so that was like the emergence of the serial killer.
I suppose, people point to probably like In Cold Blood and that, as you know, the movie and the book came out quickly.
Yes.
One after the other. Have you guys read In Cold Blood?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like that book will blow you away. Like in the movie itself, Richard Brooks, I believe, directed that. Like, that's late 60s. So to that point, that's even maybe close to 20 years before this.
I guess stuff like that is also coming on the heels of like Leopold and Loeb. And like,
well, Leopold and Loeb is like way before that, but you got like Richard Speck, John Wayne Gacy, like all that happens quick. And then by the time you're in the mid 80s, you're getting kind of the analysis of that to some degree.
Yes.
And I think it's just an interesting, not an end point, but like, I don't know what point it is, but it's a very evolutionary moment of like, what you're talking about, Blake, of this very analytical, intuitive thing. And I think this movie certainly did not get the credit at the time for that.
No.
And now obviously we recognize it. So yeah.
What I think is so great too about Peterson's line delivery when he does it here and when he repeats it later though too, and you mentioned the game recognizing game thing, is like, he cloaks it in anger, but it feels so put on that you're like, that's just a thing you're doing to convince yourself that this is not admiration, right? Like it's admiration cloaking itself as rage or anger because you can't admit that part of it.
Well, later when he's like, and this is, I'm jumping, but like when he's like, what he's saying, like, the one guy's like, how are we gonna, you know, when they're all talking, Chris Elliott's in that scene, it's, you know, not far after this, and he's like, well, I'll be the one, you know, it'll be me who's part of it, and the other guy's like, are you sure about that? Like, you know, it's a very self-aware, and this is, I think, sometimes man now gets enough credit for it, but like in his moment, man never got enough credit for the self-awareness of that.
Sure.
Of, yes, like,
absolutely. Yeah.
He might be in sicko mode for all my joking, but he's aware of it, right? Like, he's aware of the sicko mode, right?
Yes.
Like, so maybe we keep him out of jail because he knows.
Let's hear him talk to Jack.
Jack, this is Graham. Is Price still in Leighton Prince?
Yeah, he's in charge of the single print index now. What do you got, Will?
Get him to Atlanta.
Atlanta PD swears they dusted everything, and their guy is pretty good.
He is good. He's not as good as Price.
I'll get him on a plane in the morning. What do you want him to do?
Dust Mrs. Leeds' finger and toenails. Corneas of all their eyes. I think he took off his gloves, Jack.
So he has two phone conversations in the span of that scene. One is with his wife that lasts about, I don't know,
two seconds.
And then the Then the other is with Dennis Farina, who's the man who's like roping him back into this world that basically almost killed him. Literally almost killed him. Right. And he's like so into it. He's like so
he's like he's good. He's not like, as good as Price. Like, and yeah, again, roping another guy in. He's not as good as Price.
Right.
And he's like, dust the fingernails.
I felt a little bit like an idiot because I was kind of like, can you leave a fucking fingerprint on a cornea? That feels insane.
This whole movie is insane.
Well, right.
Yes.
And I guess that's part of the implication with him even saying that, right?
Yes.
To an audience, you're meant to be like, yo, nobody would ever think to look there, right? But like, I was kind of like, is that even fucking possible?
That's Will Graham. That's Will Graham. Gentlemen, we've arrived at the end of our scene.
We have.
Incredible.
Holy dooly. What a sequence.
Yeah. Thanks. Hey, thanks for giving us a good one. When you mentioned this, I am rewatching it. I was like,
I know I
was so excited to talk about it.
You know what's funny? And I don't mean to blow smoke up this movie, but any more than we're already going to do, but like almost every scene where I had a kind of a general gist, I was like, oh, I'd love these guys to do this one, or I'd love this person to talk about this one. Like, some of the people went, did you know that that's my favorite scene? I'm like,
that's funny.
I didn't. I just was like, oh, that'd be fun. This will be fun. And like, so yeah, it's so great. Guys, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so, so much. I had so much fun. I'm sorry if like I lost myself there just trying to stifle laughter because Dan Mecca's rants about sicko mode just had tickled me in such a nice way. Connor, great to talk to you all. Always love you guys so much. Do you want to plug some stuff about your great show? Anything coming up? This series, people are going to be hearing it. We're recording it a little bit earlier than you're going to be hearing it. People are going to hear it around September. So you can basically.
Oh, okay. So yeah, about the time that this would air, we'll have just come back from a little bit of a hiatus. But for listeners who don't know, we host a podcast for the Film Stage website called The B-Side, where we talk about movie stars and movie directors and sort of their in-between lesser known movies. And we will have just done some episodes on Chris Pine and a part two on Kevin Costner, in which we talked about No Way Out and Revenge and The Upside of Anger and Let Him Go. So,
and Horizons, you know, a lot of love.
Oh yeah. There'll definitely be some Horizon love because Dan and I are both big fans of that movie.
I have to credit my mate Stu Coop for saying the biggest fault that Horizon had coming out was that it wasn't released on Father's Day. And that every dad
a great point.
Received a Father's Day ticket. And he's like, it would have been like the one screening where you had to pause it and give it a false intermission so that all the dads could nap and then wake them back up from their nap with their hands down their pants and then turn the rest of the movie on so they could finish. Like, that the next time, for next time, we're trying to solve problems.
Part two. That's what they're going to do for part two.
Yeah. It'll be like the Alamo Draft House over here does babies screenings, you know, for parents with kids.
Dads and only.
So they'll do a dad's screening for Horizon Chapter Two.
I like that.
But yeah, we'll have that stuff out. So you can give a listen to that if you haven't listened yet. So.
Excellent. And I just want to prime, because on the main feed at the end of the year, you're going to hear two, speaking of sicko mode, two great decade projects. One on a Chris Pine movie, Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit,
which and Kevin Costner.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, and Costner. And yeah. Costner, we don't know that. And then the true sicko mode, Dan Mecker and I on The Gambler.
Oh, dude.
On The Gambler. It was
there's not as more sicko mode than Blake and me talking about the remake of The Gambler.
Talk about sicko, people that should be
sickos
arrested.
Only. Yeah.
People should be
anybody
arrested.
Who listens are going to jail. Yeah.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in another Thanks, episode Blake. Of Mean Hunter soon. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
This has been an episode of Mindhunter, the latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron for as little as $1 a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Mindhunter episode, Mindhunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there, so you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.